still go up. Okay.
Well, my name is Juan Ruiz again, and I'm with the Sulphur Springs Heritage Project, and I'm interviewing Betty Coleman. Betty Coleman. Elise, where were you? What year were you born?
December 29th, 1940.
Okay. And you were born in Silver Springs, correct?
I was not born in Silver Springs, okay. But my grandmother lived here, so we were raised here and in Ybor City.
Okay. Where were you born then?
Tampa. I was born in Tampa, mm-hmm. but not in Silver Springs. I'm sorry.
Oh no.
I thought you meant where they're born. Mm-hmm.
And where in Tampa exactly?
Ybor City.
Ybor City. Mm-hmm. Okay. And when did you come to Sulphur Springs?
1942.
Okay. So you were still a baby at that point?
Yes.
Okay. And where were your parents from?
From Tampa.
Okay. And what were their names?
My mother's name was Gertha mm-hmm. Holt Anderson, and my father was James Anderson. And my maiden name was Betty Anderson.
Okay. And what did your parents do for a living?
My father was a stevedore. He worked on the docks. And my mother was a housekeeper. Hmm.
And have you lived anywhere else?
No. I've always lived in Tampa.
Always in Sulphur Springs after?
Yes.
And what were your first memories of Sulphur Springs?
My first memories were the dirt roads that we played on, the playing in the streets without having to worry about cars going beeping for you to get out of the way.
And what do you remember about your school days?
I went to elementary school in the downtown area. I went to junior high in the downtown area, and then I went to high school in Belmont Heights. And at that time, there were no school buses, so we fortunately lived in an area where we were close to the schools and we walked. And when I got in high school, that school was quite a distance, so we had to ride the city bus.
Okay. What were the names of the elementary and middle schools, if you can remember?
Okay. My elementary school was Lockhart, L-O-C-K-H-A-R-T, okay. Elementary. My junior high was Booker T. Washington. And my senior was Middleton High School, which they recently rebuilt.
Okay. And at least, do you remember how Sulphur Springs was laid out?
Sulphur Springs started out as they had no grocery stores out here, no department stores. That was in the downtown area of Sulphur Springs. To get there, we would have to walk. They had little corner stores that were black owned, but to do big shopping, we always had to take the bus and go.
And so the black owned stores, well, actually one important aspect of kind of our project is to kind of know more about the history of Spring Hill. Mm-hmm. And was there dividing lines?
Yes, the dividing line was Bird Street and Nebraska Avenue.
She is so nice.
To Rolet Park and Waters. And Nebraska and Bush. That was the area that was called Sulphur Springs.
Sorry, y'all. I didn't know you were in here.
No problem. And so then, that was also called Spring Hill as well? Or
it was called Spring Hill.
Did many people go use that name, or was it more just Sulphur Springs? Or
when It was Spring Hill, and I don't know how the name Sulphur Springs came from. The water system that they had out here was not connected to the city water. It was well water. Most everybody had well water. And the water tastes like sulfur because there was no purification. And that's how it got its name.
Okay.
Sulphur Springs. One time, there were no businesses out here for the blacks. It was just like a little town within a town. And predominantly blacks lived west of Nebraska to Rowlett Street. And from Bush Boulevard to Bird Street.
And so the black-owned businesses that you were talking about before, where were they located?
They were like little nightclubs. One was on Yukon Street. It was a little bar type thing that would open on weekends. And then there was one lady that had a daycare. There was another lady that sold goods, you know, like cookies. Cookies and cakes and pop out of her house. And that's where the kids would go get like frozen cups and stuff like that. But it was hard. It was really hard because you couldn't go in certain areas. We knew where our limits were.
Which area could you not go into?
For instance, they had a swimming pool on Nebraska, which is now city-owned, but the blacks couldn't use that pool. They couldn't swim there. The park, there was a park that was just not made available for the blacks. I personally don't know if there were signs or anything prohibiting blacks. It's just that I remember my grandparents always saying that we couldn't go to that park because blacks just wouldn't go over there. Once they colored, just don't go over there. So we didn't worry about it. And the same thing with this church that I am a member of now. We would pass by this, go down the street, going to, it was like a little strip plaza on Nebraska where they had a little five and dime store, Belk Lindsay, just little stores that you could buy stuff. And we'd always we'd ask questions about this church because it was the biggest church out here. To us, it looked very big as compared to the church we were going to. And we'd always say, we want to go there.
Yeah.
My grandmother would say, well, you can't go there. They don't allow blacks to go there. And that just stuck in my mind. Like, we had to walk past this church, you know, to go to ours. And I couldn't understand why we never could go here. Then as I was growing up, I realized there were certain areas that were just not open to the black people. And when I became an adult and moved out of this area into my own place, I had the opportunity to come over here for a meeting. And when I found out that the meeting was at this church, I talked to the pastor, Augusto, and I said to him, are they having service there? He said, yes. I said, do they allow blacks to come? And he looked at me kind of strange, like, what are you talking about? And then I explained to him. And he says, oh, yes. So then I started to go. And in talking with him and coming to church, then they decided to have a reconciliation service to kind of reconcile the blacks and apologize to the remaining older people that lived here for what had transpired long before.
And how did that go? How was that event?
It wasn't a real big turnout because, once again, the older people were skeptical, and they just, it was embedded in them that they couldn't come here, and they thought it would be some kind of trick or something. And my grandmother at the time, she'd already passed, and my sister, she didn't come to the service because she didn't believe it was actually going to happen. But they did a reconciliation service, and I would say about maybe 20 people came to the service. But since that time, I think that was in 1981, 82.
Okay, well.
This was in 97, so that would have been in 96, 95.
Oh, okay.
So I started coming here to church, but unfortunately that pastor didn't last very long. He just kind of left the church without saying anything.
How was the... what was the state of the church at that point?
It was struggling. Not a lot of members. Because, again, the people here, the blacks, were apprehensive about attending a white church. So nobody came. And I think that was one of the things that discouraged Pastor Augusto. And they left. But I stayed, and I just kept coming every Sunday, even though the church wasn't open. I would come thinking, well, maybe this Sunday there'll be somebody there.
Okay, well.
And after about 2 months, someone from the district office of the Assemblies of God got in touch with me and asked if I would come to a meeting, and I did. And they explained to me what had happened with the former pastor, and that they had spoke to another pastor, and he agreed to come and take over. Now, he really must be desperate.
Yeah.
He doesn't know how this church is. This church was so run down, and it was just terrible. But I was still believing that something good would happen, and something good did happen. And the person that they were talking about was Pastor Steve.
And so, I kind of wanted to go back and get the name of the church that you went to.
Okay.
At least when you were a child.
St. Matthew Missionary Baptist Church.
And where was that located?
It was on Yukon Street.
Okay.
They have since moved that church location to East Tampa.
Okay.
But I went there. And I left there, and I joined Gateway Christians because it was an Assemblies of God, and that's what I was wanting to be involved in, a church with more enthusiasm, not so laid back.
Okay. And so then St. Matthew's left, and then that's when you went to Gateway Christian?
St. Matthew's. I left St. Matthew's,
okay. And
I went to find another church.
How old were you when you did that?
I was already grown and married.
Okay.
Yeah, so the years in between, I had gotten married, had my family, and just kind of church hopped from one church to the other, trying to find where I belonged.
Okay.
So there were some years in there when I didn't attend a church at all. Was raising my children, but then when I realized I needed to raise my children in church, that's when I came back to Sulphur Springs.
How many children do you have?
Five.
Okay. And Willie's, how old were you when you first got married?
I was 16.
Okay.
I was a senior in high school. I was almost 17.
Okay. And are you still married?
Yes, but not to the same.
Oh, okay.
He died, so I'm married.
And so then when you came to this, so when Pastor Steve came here, how did things change?
Pastor Steve had such a passion for this neighborhood, and he would get out and go walking door to door, inviting people to come to church. Mm-hmm. And it was slow in the beginning, because, you know, people were skeptical again, you know, just another passing through minister. But he has shown that this is where God wanted him to be. And he stuck with it. And in turn, God has blessed him to turn his church around.
And what kind of, how was Sulphur Springs back, at least, oh, the pastor said came?
Sulphur Springs was bad. It was, the people that lived here in the area were either alcoholics, drug addicts, transients. Nobody stayed stationary. The people that were stationary were the older people that are still in their homes now. And as they have died off and left the homes to the grandchildren or children, then the grandchildren have, you know, sold the property and gone on. Because there's no, they just want to get out of this area.
Okay. And so they just kind of, they don't really want to stay around.
No, because they couldn't see Sulphur Springs growing and couldn't see it as a place they wanted to raise their children.
Okay.
And I was one of them. Mm-hmm. I left because there was nothing, I saw nothing here. Nothing was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like the city wasn't doing anything to keep the little town together. They weren't paving the roads, you know. So people just left to try to start a better, in their minds, a better life.
So you did leave?
Mm-hmm.
Where did you go?
I moved to an apartment in North Tampa, like off near Fletcher and Fowler.
Oh, okay, where USF is.
Yeah, I moved there. Mm-hmm. And from there, I bought a house. And eventually, I came back to Sulphur Springs.
What year did you come back?
I came back in, I would say, 1992.
Okay.
I came back.
What brought you back?
Well, my grandmother was ill, mm-hmm. and I was divorced at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I came back to help her out, and I moved in with her in her house,
mm-hmm.
which is still over on Skagway.
Okay.
And I just, yes. When she died, I just stayed, I stayed in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And then I met my husband and we, he had two houses out here and I had one.
Oh, okay.
So then we decided we would sell our houses and move. So then we moved to Temple Terrace, where we are now.
Oh, okay.
So
when did you move to Temple Terrace?
About 13 years ago.
Okay.
13 or 14 years ago.
Mm. Okay, so then, Elise, what kind of changes have you seen also during that time of Sulphur Springs?
Oh, I've seen a lot of houses being built.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people coming back into the area,
mm-hmm.
and new growth, you know, like people are migrating here because they don't have that fear of drugs being sold on their corner or,
mm-hmm.
you know, being carjacked or robbed,
mm-hmm.
which was all that was happening at one time.
Okay.
Once you got home from work and got inside, you just didn't go out. This was in like 85, 90, 91. But that's changed a lot. The area is policed a lot more. People feel more safer in walking the street. There was, even after Pastor Steve got here, we would go out to pass out tracks,
mm-hmm.
and there were some streets that I still wouldn't walk down.
Okay.
And it was because that fear was still there from when I was younger. And I just couldn't erase it. So when we walked the streets, I'd say, I can't go down, you know, this way, or I won't go that way.
There were which streets? If the
Klondike. Mm. All those streets south of Waters, Bird Street, some other little streets in there. Elmer.
Brooks. You said my street?
No.
Because it's not bad.
Thank you.
It's the white street. Like the suburb.
The stigmatism is still there. I mean, it's just like passed on.
It's interesting, and
it's sad because you form this in your head where you can't. For me, it was I couldn't walk down those streets because south of Waters, blacks didn't live there, so I would have no reason to go down there. But that has all changed now. But you know, it's still like.
You still feel it. Then.
Yeah, I still have to kind of work my way through it.
Mm-hmm. What kind of, were you able to go to the arcade or?
Oh, no.
No, okay.
Not in my day.
Yeah.
Because that would have been in 1956, 57, 58. Mm-hmm. I probably could have, but there would not have been a lot of blacks. And that's what you, when you're in unfamiliar areas, you would look for somebody to hook up with, and nobody would go.
Yeah. And so then that was definitely off limits, and even by the time it was torn down, you still didn't go there?
When it was torn down, I was happy.
Oh, really?
Because I never really got to go there.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes on weekends, my grandmother, we'd go walking, and we'd walk through there. But then the stores were all closed, so we, didn't fear any repercussions.
Yeah.
So we'd walk through there, and we'd walk behind, and walk over and look at the pool. But it was like, once we got to the red light on Bird Street and Nebraska, that was like, you stop here, you don't go any further.
Mm-hmm.
Because blacks just didn't live up in that area.
So then, I mean, you would have to, did you go, so you went out, or you went to downtown to do a number of other?
Yes, we would take the bus and go all the way downtown, you know, where like the University of Tampa is.
Yeah.
There's a downtown area there, Franklin Street, all that. That's where we would go and shop. We never shopped in the arcade.
Okay. Did you have, at least, did you ever use the trolley, or?
Yes. When we lived in Ybor City, we used the trolley. Mm-hmm. The trolley would go right in front of our house.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, we were there when they lived over there, when they took the rails up.
Oh, wow. What year was that?
Okay, I was probably about 11 or 12.
Okay.
So this would be like in 1952.
Okay.
When they took the rails up. And it's so ironic now that they put them back down. It's like, okay. When I see that, I'm thinking, they could only have foreseen that it would come
still
back.
Still there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The old spaghetti warehouse. I mean, the spaghetti warehouse. It's an eating place now in Ybor City.
I don't know.
Well, we used to play in that. It was a tobacco place where they rolled cigars.
Oh, okay.
And now it's a real famous place.
So you could just play over there?
And we used to play in that area. Yeah, play on the streets and play behind those big warehouses.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's all commercial. So I look at that, and when I hear people writing about Ybor City, and I'm thinking, those are not true statements.
Oh, really?
I lived there. I know what it was like.
Huh. What kind of things do they say that just don't ring true?
Oh, how easy it was to get employment. How easy it was for the younger people. But there again, they're not talking about the blacks. We're talking about the Latins, the Cubans.
Mm-hmm.
But Ybor City, when we moved from Sulphur Springs, we lived in Ybor City. It was like blacks, Hispanics. They were all together.
Mm-hmm. Was it? It wasn't like one block was. It wasn't. It was pretty.
Oh, it was like our house was here, and we had a Spanish family living there, and the kids would play together.
Oh, okay.
And we had to learn how to do that because naturally, you're 7, 8 years old, and you see a white child playing, you don't go up to them and start playing with them.
Oh, even at 7 or 8,
you knew better. But, and it was hard. It was hard, you know, and we asked our grandmother, you know, why is this, and why is it like this? Why do we have to sit on the back of the bus? Why do we not have cold water at the water fountain? Why is that sign up that it says colored? You know, all this kind of stuff.
Were there a lot of signs like that here in Silver Springs?
Oh, yes. And there were a lot of unwritten signs that you just knew not to go in the store. You'd stand outside and give somebody money to bring you stuff out and hope they bring it to you and keep you money. It was really something.
Did you have any jobs when you were a teenager or anything like that?
Not out here. No. When I became a teenager, we were living in Ybor City at that time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I had a job there.
What kind of job was it?
My first job was at a drugstore. I would dip ice cream.
Oh, okay.
And from that, I started working at a grocery store where we would separate onions and potatoes, you know, take the bad ones out. Mm-hmm. So we were able to get little jobs,
okay.
You know, in Ybor City. You didn't think about trying to get a job out here.
Oh, really?
You know,
okay.
You know. If you didn't know anybody, or if your grandparents or parents didn't know anyone, there were just no jobs.
Mm-hmm. So when did you move back here after living in Ybor City?
Oh, I got married and, you know, lived all over. Then my husband died when I was working, and I got remarried. And my husband now, he was living out here.
Okay. And,
So then we moved into his house, and I said, well, I have, my house was on one street, but my grandfather was living in it. And he still lives there.
Oh, he does? Okay. Yeah.
And we decided, he'd sell his property and we bought a house in Temple Terrace.
Okay.
Because I just didn't want to live over here.
Huh. So then how old is your grandfather?
He's 81.
Okay.
82.
Okay.
My mother's still alive also.
Oh, really? Wow, okay. So,
My grandfather still lives in the house that my grandmother built.
Your grandmother built it?
Well, when she and her first husband, they built it. It was a one-room house. And over the years, they added on. So now it's a two-bedroom.
Wow.
Yeah.
What did they make? Do you know where they built it out of? Or?
Wood.
Okay.
Because they had a lumber place on Nebraska. Mm-hmm. Robbins Lumber. That's where a lot of blacks worked out here. And if you got a job there, you were, like, really doing well, according to their standards. And because they could, like, get leftover wood, and that's how a lot of them got their homes built.
Huh. And do you know what year they built their house?
She built that house, I want to say, maybe 1948, 49. I had some old receipts. Where she had bought lumber and stuff, and I think...
So it was after you were born?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, it was after I was born. But the house is still there.
Wow, okay. That'd be nice. I know you talked one time about you went with the reporter and kind of showed him around a little bit, at least. Maybe that would be kind of nice to be able to do so as well. But then for another time. It'd definitely be great to kind of go by and also maybe to even just talk to your mother or your grandfather.
Well, my mother, she lives in an assisted living facility. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's okay. Mm-hmm. She just lives there because when my stepfather died, it was best to put her there.
Exactly.
Because I was working, my sister was working. But you start talking to her, well, you better have a lot of time.
Oh, really? Did she spend a lot of time here at Silver Spring?
Yes, she did.
Yeah, definitely was. So then, Elise, do you remember, like, around the time of desegregation and the civil rights movement, what kind of things do you remember around here, either wherever you were living?
Okay. I remember when they first opened the counters at the department stores that was in downtown Tampa. Mm-hmm. There was one department store called W.T. Grant, and they had a lunch counter. Mm-hmm. And before desegregation, you could order from the lunch counter. You'd stand on the end and order what you wanted, but you couldn't sit at the counter and eat it. You'd have to get it and go outside. So when they desegregation happened, mm-hmm. the first place that a lot of people went was to go and sit at the counter and order something and eat it. And it was like, that was like the big thing. So I remember that. I also remember a lot of the big department stores where even though you could go in and shop, you were like, they would make sure that you had money. Mm-hmm. If you went in the store, they would ask to see your money.
No, they would ask just to just right there
to see your money, yes, because if not, you couldn't come in there.
Oh, really?
All of these, and I tell people that and go, what? Yes, they would. These were the very prominent stores, not like the little department, like the Five and Dime store, not those stores.
Okay.
It was like Wolf Brothers, Moss Brothers, J.J. Falk. These were big name stores, Fawners. These were all affluential people that lived on the Bay Shore and had stores downtown. You just couldn't walk in there. I mean, when it all finished, they were pulling you in off the street.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, you know, like in 1950, mm-hmm. 52, 53, you just didn't walk in those stores.
Mm-hmm. So then, do you remember when the buses were desegregated?
Mm-hmm.
Or just, how was that? What was?
You know, as a child, when I look back now, mm-hmm. how unfair it was. But as a child, we didn't think anything of getting on the bus, putting your token in, getting off, and walking to the back door to get in. Because we were little. But then when I think back, as I got older, though, how cruel. You know, you put your, and then, if you were sitting and someone got on the bus that was not black and they came and wanted your seat because there were no seats in front, you're expected to get up.
Even though, you know, it's...
Yeah, yes. Even though,
like an elderly...
It didn't matter.
Woman,
it didn't matter. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter. That's why when that Rosa Parks thing happened, I don't think I would have been bold enough to do that. Because, in a sense, we were being raised in fear. You know? Some people it affected, some it didn't. Some people got over it. And I would want to think that I got over it, but still, there's still in the back of my, you know, mind, some things I just won't ever, you know.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
I had two sisters.
Oh, okay. Were they older or young?
I'm the oldest.
Oh, okay.
There's one that's 2 years younger than me, and then the youngest is 10 years younger than me.
Okay.
It's three girls.
Okay. And so then, Elise, how was...
Now, my younger sister, mm-hmm. she didn't experience a lot of that because by the time she was born, she was born in 52, and by the time she was ready to go to school, 58, it was better. You know, desegregation had happened, and she didn't experience a lot of it.
Huh.
But We did.
So then, she didn't have to... What kind of things do you think that... was it desegregation? Did she go to a different school, or did she...
She went to a different school. And she didn't have to worry about if she walked up to a counter and someone else walked up behind her. She didn't have to worry about stepping aside and letting that person go ahead, which happened a lot. And when you met a white person that was nice to you, you were like, why are they being so nice? You just couldn't get through your head that there are people that are nice, because all your life coming up, it's been you at the bank. My grandmother worked for this family on Bayshore, a very prominent family of attorneys. And even though she worked for them 20-some years, when she'd go to work, because that's the way it was when she started, she'd always go in through the back door. So then when we went to pick her up one day and got out of the car and went up to ring the doorbell, I thought my grandmother was going to have a stroke. What are you doing here? Come around. And the lady, Miss Whitaker, I can always remember her saying to my grandmother, Ella, that was her name, I told you, it's okay. I always remember those words. Because she was just so used to going through the back door and, miss this and miss that. It's like, okay.
Wow. Do you remember when, were you around in Silver Springs when the interstate was built?
No. I lived in Ybor City. But I do remember it being... When it came through downtown.
Did it change a lot of things? Or?
Yes. More stores were opened to you. Mm-hmm. More things were made available.
Mm-hmm. And what years was that?
I want to say in 58.
Oh, okay. So that was around the same time, desegregation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you have a car by then, or?
No. I didn't get a car until I was 30 years old. I didn't even learn how to drive until I was 30. That was just a luxury that you just didn't have. And I think back and I tell my sister, we used to go and visit relatives out of town, but my grandmother that raised us, she probably knew how to drive. But we were always going places, so now I think there was always someone, a relative, taking us places. And we had this one uncle, and my sister and I would sit down, and as cars would go by, we'd say, I want that kind of car when I get grown. I want that kind of, kids do.
Yeah.
So then when our uncle came over, and he had a Cadillac, and we thought that was just a really big deal. And then when we got to ride in it, we were like afraid to sit on the seat stuff, because we, that was just a luxury we never were afforded. We didn't walk or take the bus. That was it.
And how long would it take to use at least to get from one place to another with the bus?
Oh, it depended on where you were going. And for us, riding the bus was a luxury, so we always wanted it to take a long time. We didn't want to just get on the bus and get off. We wanted to ride for a long time. Because that was a luxury. We're so used to walking everywhere.
Did you have a lot of family here in the Tampa area?
Yeah, we did.
Do you have family in other places?
My younger sister, she moved to Michigan when she was 19, and she never came back.
Oh, no.
She's still there. And I have cousins that live in Miami, but she's the only one that really went north.
Okay.
And I have some cousins up there, but the one closest to me is my sister.
So most of the roots are really here. And they were originally here in Tampa?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And my grandmother originally was born in Tallahassee.
Okay.
but she came to Florida, to Tampa, mm-hmm. to with some, they used to pick fruit, mm-hmm. and they would take them like from city to city, and they got here. Mm-hmm. So she tells us, they got to Tampa, and of course it wasn't built up like it is now, where all of this, like Temple Terrace area, was orange groves, mm-hmm. and they would pick oranges. That's how Temple Terrace got its name, because the trees, they were orange trees, and they were temple oranges.
Oh, okay.
And that's how Temple Terrace got its name.
Hmm. So then, did she tell you any other stories of kind of when she first came to Temple?
Oh, that it was hard for them to get jobs, you know, because they had no skills. They were straight from the farm, and came to Tampa thinking, well, they'd heard that Tampa was a better place than, you know, Midway, Florida, Tallahassee, Quincy, and they came here looking for better jobs. And getting a job as a housekeeper, to them, that was good, as opposed to working in the fields all day. So those were good jobs.
And so then, that was your grandmother?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then your mother also worked
out there. Yeah, she followed in my grandmother's footsteps, worked doing the same type of work. My grandmother never went to school, mm-hmm. but she worked around people that taught her how to read and write. Mm-hmm. And then my mother, she did go to school. Mm-hmm. She didn't finish high school, but she has like an eighth grade education. Okay. She reads and writes and all that. But there again, neither of them had cars made available to them to learn how to drive or anything. Mm-hmm. They just depended on the bus. Mm-hmm.
And so then, the kind of wanted to go back a little bit more, or come back a little bit more toward, I guess, the present, and just kind of, with at least a lot of your involvement in Silver Springs, like in the last 10 years, has it been revolving around the church?
Yes, yes.
And what kind of things have you done, at least have you?
Oh, mainly just working with the youth here at the church. Mm-hmm. I started out doing that, trying to help keep the kids off the street, teaching mm-hmm. them to come, telling them about church, mm-hmm. getting them to come here and get involved in things here at the church so that they wouldn't be hanging out on the corners, just trying to teach the kids that there is something better to do than, you know, jacking cars and robbing people and shooting. I can always remember when Pastor Steve first got here, mm-hmm. and he was reading to the kids, because we didn't have a lot, and reading about the crucifixion, about Christ being crucified on the mm-hmm. cross, and just saying to the kids how he was nailed to the cross. And one little boy said, "Is that how Jesus died? We thought somebody shot him."
Oh no. Well,
because they had not, no one had been out here to show them to come to church, even though there were churches around. The kids were just, the parents were not, didn't really make them go to church or mm-hmm. teach them how to go. So when we had these little wild heathens coming in, it's like, gosh, Pastor Steve, don't bring any more kids in here. I can't deal with this. They were interesting, but trying to get them to comprehend what they were telling them mm-hmm. was hard. But In the long run, they started liking coming here. And mm-hmm. Pastor Steve would say he would come up sometime and kids would be outside the door waiting for somebody to come and open the door so they could come in.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. Huh. So that's the impact that he's had on the kids coming here.
So what kind of program is that?
We started a lot of outreach programs that we did out on the parking lot mm-hmm. where we would... we had a clown minister where kids would older kids would dress up like clowns and do puppets. Mm-hmm. And we'd give the kids sat through the whole thing, we'd reward them by giving them a bag with goodies in it.
Okay.
So, you know, they look forward to that every, oh, we want to do that again. And from that, they would start coming to church because they found out they came to church on Sundays, they'd be rewarded also.
Yeah.
And that's how the children's ministry got started here. But just by doing that, we had to take it to them in a way that they would understand. And they understood getting something for free.
Yeah.
That's what they... So, and I would always say to Pastor Steve, how long are we going to give these kids free stuff? Aren't they just going to come on their own? Like, we need to just stop feeding them. But that's how our children's ministry grew. It grew from like, we had one family, it's like four kids in the family, and it grew from four to over 200 kids. A lot of kids have been blessed through this church. A lot of families have been blessed through we had a clothing ministry, food ministry, and I worked in a surgery center, and a lot of the doctors there would donate big boxes of that, like 50-pound bags of beans and rice,
so
that we could, you know, put it in bags for the families.
Oh, that's awesome.
I know, yeah. But that was the way to get the people to come in. Mm-hmm. Give them, everybody out here seems, if they know they're going to get something for nothing, they'll come. Mm-hmm. But then trying to get them to come back on Sunday was a whole other thing. So we had to devise a system to get them to come on Sunday. Mm-hmm. So we started giving the food baskets away on Sunday after mm-hmm. church.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
Because if you give it to them on Thursday, they're not coming to church on Sunday. No, they're not. So
yeah.
We did that. But it's all been rewarding. And it's all been worth it. Pastor Steve is so awesome, he and his wife. And when I first saw them, and I thought, oh my God, they are so young.
Oh, really?
And, you know, this church is so beat up. And I would say, they're not going to stay. They're not going to stay. But they did. Because this church was really a mess. It was so run down, beat up, pews. It was awful. I was really embarrassed for them to see the church.
Oh, really? And how long had you been coming here?
I had been going here 2 years prior to them.
Okay. And so with Pastor Anthony?
Mm-hmm, Pastor Tony.
Or Pastor Anthony.
He and his wife, I started here like in 95, the end of 95, 96, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I've been here almost 2 years.
Okay.
And then Pastor Tony, they left. They took another church out in town and country, because this one wasn't growing.
Okay.
But Pastor Tony had a daytime job, mm-hmm. he and his wife did, so. He couldn't really get out and pound the pavements like Pastor Steve does. Pastor Steve just, you know, believed God to supply their needs, and he got out and pound the pavement and tell people, come to church. It's just awesome that, and that they've stayed so long.
Were there a lot of Latinos? I'm sorry. Back then, because I was reading the paper.
Not really.
Okay.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. No. Even now, we've got a mixture mm-hmm. in our congregation now. Blacks, Africans, Latinos, Jamaicans, all nations mm-hmm. are represented. But when Pastor Tony was here, I think if we had 20 people on Sunday, that was a lot.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was discouraging to them. Because they couldn't get anybody to come. People were apprehensive. But since that time, a lot of those people have moved away, and other people have moved into the area that didn't really know the history of Sulphur Springs. So that has helped us a lot.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the older people died. But all in all, it's okay.
So what kind of future do you see for Silver Springs, or would you like to see for Silver Springs?
I would like to see all of these kids in school every day, and just respecting others, respecting other people's properties. And it's gotten better with the building of a lot of houses have been built in the area recently, in the last 2 years, and people have started moving back into Sulphur Springs. So I see that, and I think, yes, that's good. Yeah. But we still have a long way to go. And I don't even know if I will see everything happen in my years here, but I just pray that it continues to go, to grow and go upward.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So then, Elise, I was wondering about the dog track, Elise. Kind of, well, Elise, what are your feelings, what were your feelings through the years of the dog track?
You know, for a long time, I didn't even know what that was.
Oh, really?
When my grandmother and I, my sister, would be walking, we passed by it, but she said it was a dog track, and it didn't dawn on me that there was gambling or rape, But then when we got past the dog track and we get to the arcade, it was like, I just couldn't figure it out. And I'm surprised that they even had it there this long. When they built it, whoever was responsible, people would come in, and the parking lot would always be full of cars, so you know that people were migrating to that, not the people that lived here, out here. I guess if the blacks went to the dog track, they would walk up there and play the numbers. I don't know how.
So it really wasn't really a big thing for other people.
No.
And it wasn't really like talked about in a negative way either.
No, because nobody paid any attention to it.
Okay, so just there.
And it was just there. Just there, something that, and they were not there all year long. It was like a few months out of the year. They'd be here, and then they'd go somewhere else.
Yeah, so they still do. I think
they still do that.
Yeah.
See, I don't even. I've never been in there. I've never been up those stairs to go in there to see what goes on.
Nice. I kind of wonder, why it's still there personally, but.
I know. I don't. Ask my husband about it, because I see the cars out there at night sometimes, and I say, what are they doing there? Because they go in there and they book the races or something, I don't know. I don't care.
So then did you still have a lot of long-term friends who still kind of live here?
No.
Most of them
are dead.
Oh.
The ones that I had that went to high school with me, they either have moved on to other areas of the city, or moved away from here, or they're gone. Every now and then I will see someone in the mall or at the grocery store, and they're going, do you still live in the Springs? And I'm going, no, I live in Triple Terrace.
And do you remember anything about the tourist club or the Harbor Club?
The thing by the bridge.
Yeah.
No.
At least that was another place.
We just looked at it and kept going.
Would anybody work there that was African American or?
No, not that I knew.
Okay.
I think recently they have blacks, but. Years ago, no. It was just that tourists that would come, and they bring their young kids and they worked in the kitchen or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so what other jobs did African Americans have other than Robbins? Was it Robbins Lumber?
Robbins Lumber. That was the main. And then the women out here, a lot of them worked at the tuberculosis hospital. It was W.T. Edwards. It was way over on Del Mabry.
Okay.
There was a tuberculosis hospital. A lot of the women and men also worked there. That was sort of like getting a job at, say, Honeywell or, they employed a lot of blacks because it was a tuberculosis hospital. Not a lot of people are going to want to work there. So, of course, they hired a lot of blacks. And the only other major job would be that a lot of people did pick fruit. That was it. And they would have jobs out of this area, like they worked in homes. A lot of the men did lawn maintenance. You know, they would find a man with a truck and a couple of lawnmowers, and he'd get some kids and they'd cut yards and stuff. My husband did that. He worked with his uncle for a while, cutting yards. So that was one of the jobs that a lot of black men had out here. But I don't know of any other big jobs. Like, I guess they would hang around and catch breaks on those big trailer trucks that come by. No, I don't really know. Because I was young, it didn't really faze me. I never even knew what kind of work my grandfather did.
No.
All I knew that he would get up in the mornings and get in the car and go and come home. And my grandma, it was something your parents just didn't talk about.
Yeah.
You know? They didn't sit down and tell you what kind of work they were doing. I knew what my grandmother did because the lady would bring her home from work.
Okay.
I knew that she was a maid, a housekeeper. But
which house? Or do you know, was it in Sulphur Springs or was it?
No, the lady lived on Bayshore. And she would have to take the bus and then transfer downtown to another bus that would drop her off. Or sometimes she would pick her up at the bus stop downtown and take her to the house and bring her back in the afternoons there. And she'd take the bus from there home. But she very rarely brought her all the way home.
Okay.
Bay Shore is a long ways.
I'm still kind of learning a little bit about Tampa myself. I just kind of got here in August, so. But, you know. So then, at least, there's lots of questions here that, this is great to kind of add. I guess we've only done probably about 6 interviews so far.
Really?
And we're kind of looking for other people, especially, at least, and I think your perspective will be extremely important to kind of.
And there are lots of people that were raised out here. Their parents had the house and they've died and left the properties to their children. And the children have the property inherited it. Some of them sold it and some they rent the properties out to other people. And like my husband, he was left 2 houses by his aunt and uncle who raised him. And we kept the property up for a while, but then he sold it. But my house that my grandfather lives in, it's still over there. And I've had people offer to buy it, but I don't know if I want to sell it or not. It's on the street just before Bush Boulevard.
Yeah, Skagway.
Skagway.
Yeah. We were just talking about that actually in a meeting the other day where we were like the oldest house in Sulphur Springs is on Skagway, and so we were really interested in kind of finding out kind of who lived there. And I think it dated back to 1909 or something like that. So, we're definitely trying to focus a little bit more. And also we have an event that's going on.
Yeah, I saw that. I took a copy of this.
Oh, okay.
I've got it on my refrigerator.
Okay, great. And it would be great if you could, you know, come to
I will, and I'll bring my sister. I'll bring her and her mom.
Oh, okay. Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
And just talk about Spring Hill and also Silver Springs and just,
Well, Spring Hill, you were asking about Spring Hill. Now, Spring Hill was, they called it Spring Hill because it was hilly before the interstate was built over there.
Yeah.
And those houses were built up on the hill. But then, I don't know how the name changed from Spring Hill to Sulphur Springs, except that the water, when they, for some reason, the water had that sulfur bypassed it.
You guys have fun? You learning a lot?
I'm learning a whole lot.
You're well, didn't you?
Definitely.
Thank you, Miss Betty, for doing that.
All right. See you tomorrow night.
Is that article helpful?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I forgot about this article.
You can make a copy of it. That's the only copy I have.
I'll leave it.
You just got to put white out over the names.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Could I also have a copy as well?
Yeah, I don't know. We're struggling with our copy machines right now.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you can make one at work or if you have one at the house, but whatever.
I definitely appreciate it, Pastor. At least thank you for sending this back.
Okay, my friend. Well, and we'll connect, I guess, Monday maybe? Or
definitely.
Tuesday, Monday, okay.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Do you want to take this and make copies and bring it
back? Okay, I can definitely do that. Yeah, I'll make a copy for you as well. But, at least, we're trying to just learn a lot about just what's gone on in the history of Sulphur Springs.
And there's so much has happened, and people have moved, and then you see some that moved and came back. Mm-hmm. Like the park over there, that was a park that was put there by the city because they had the other park here off Yukon, but it was on that side of Nebraska. And of course, people were not going to let their kids cross Nebraska.
Yeah.
So they threw that little park up over there. Mm-hmm. I remember when they did that. And later, they put the little baseball part on there. Mm-hmm. And on Sundays, the baseball teams would come, softball teams would come and play games over there, but there would be an all-white softball team. And I thought, gosh, you can't even have a park without being invaded. That was what I was thinking.
Wait, you know when they built that park?
No, I don't know when. It was, that park was there like in 55.
Okay.
But the baseball part wasn't there. They dug that out and made a softball area. But they put the park there, and it's like, there were no swings. Nothing. It's like, come on.
Yeah,
no, then they hung some swings and put a couple of slides over there. But you look at that park, and you look at some of the other parks that are done by the city, it's like, still.
It's a big difference.
Oh, yes. But things will get better. Things will get better.
We got to work at it,
Yes, maybe not in my day, but somebody, maybe my grandchildren.
Well, at least we can and just.